Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax and unwind tonight with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy work week flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, dude.
The 90s called.
With Christine Taylor and David Lasher.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Hey, Dude, the 90s called. I am Christine Taylor, and I'm here with my lovely co-host.
David Lasher.
The one and only. Hi, David.
What's up? How are you?
It's so fun that we get to see each other like this. I think we should tell the listeners, like, I know we did a couple things together, but obviously we're mostly doing this on Zoom. And so we're not seeing each other in between these moments that we're popping on here together. So this is our moment to catch up.
We went at least a decade without seeing each other. So
and now I can't go a week without seeing you.
I love it. Honestly, that's like one of my favorite parts of this whole thing. But I showed up an hour early at our normal time.
Yes.
So I did the whole show in my head and it went great. You were hilarious.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I felt so good about it. I'm so glad.
I was like, where is everybody? How is your week? How's everything going? How's the family?
Everything is good. The week is good. Spring break is on the horizon for my son. So I know we talked a little bit about the college stuff last week. We're going to do a couple little college visits. We're going to just chill out. I feel like when my kids are in spring break mode and they're more relaxed and happy, that makes me more relaxed and happy.
And wait, can I just say, I saw a clip of you on Drew Barrymore.
Thank you.
You look amazing. You were so great. I only saw like 30 seconds, though. I want to watch the whole thing. How did it go?
It was so much fun. I will, maybe tease a little that Drew and I reconnected. I mean, the interview aired, but the reason we reconnected is because I reached out to her to come on this show, which is in the works. Obviously, right. She has a her own show. She has her own podcast. She has an entrepreneur. She has a magazine. She has home goods. She's wow. A very busy lady. But she is going to make the time to come and talk to us. And we had a great wedding singer reunion. This is also the 25-year reunion for the wedding singer. when that came out. So we had just a great time seeing each other. I've probably seen her a few times over the years since then, but it was so much fun. And honestly, I know it was on TV and I know it was in front of an audience, but it really was like catching up with, and she's just so, she just has such a zest for life. She, yes. You know, which I think it's on a clip on our Instagram account here, but she's just so fun. It's infectious. It's like you just want to keep talking for hours and hours. So it was a blast. But the good news is she is going to come on here at some point soon. So if we have any fans out there who have just been waiting for that Drew Barrymore episode, and you're going to say like, unless we get Drew Barrymore, we're not listening anymore. I promise you, we're going to have Drew on, and we'll talk. We'll take a much deeper dive. She's so much 90s work to talk about. But let's talk about our guest today, who is like the, I think epitomizes 90s music, the vibe, Lisa Loeb, the one and only Lisa Loeb. What is your memory?
You know how music can bring you back exactly to where you were in your life at the time.
Yeah.
So I was driving my daughter Chelsea last night. And I put the song on. I said, I'm interviewing this artist tomorrow and just listen to this. And, you know, it brought me right back to when I moved to L.A. And I just felt so nostalgic for the 90s. And Chelsea was into it, man. You know, she's like, the music holds up.
Yeah, there really is just something about the energy of that song. It just sort of represents a very specific moment in time that any of us who of course we talked to Ben, and the song was a big hit on the Reality Bites soundtrack and is a huge part of that movie. Like, you don't think of that movie without what that soundtrack was as well. Right.
And Ethan Hawke also like was helped bring it to Ben. I can't wait to hear about how that all happened.
Yeah, I asked Ben about it to remind me of what the story. It's a really good story, so I want to hear her side of it too. But yeah, it really was that, you know, so 90s, just so having the CDs in our car and playing a song, just hitting repeat. You know, we talked to Adam Duritz about it too. It's the same feeling that song, and she is just it. I mean, we'll wait and until she comes on to talk to her, because we could probably like tease everything that we want to ask her.
No, I really, it reminded me of how much I missed the 90s. You know, you listen to that song and you know, it brings you right back, and things are different now. It was just a more innocent time, man. You know,
gosh, I know. And yeah, well, it looks like she's in the waiting room. So let's bring her in and talk to her all about this fun stuff.
Cool.
Hello.
Hi. This is, first of all, this is so exciting. Like, we just spent probably 10 minutes talking about what your music meant to us in the 90s and how nostalgic it is, and just what an honor it is to have you on here today talking to us about it all.
Thank you so much. Well, it's very exciting to be on here.
Lisa, I just wanted to quickly ask you about, your first band,
Liz and Lisa.
Was that Liz Mitchell?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Do you know Liz Mitchell?
Yes. I grew up in Scarsdale, New York, and Liz and her sister Caroline were in, I think maybe the first musical production I did, of the Music Man, and Liz played, Marion.
Yes.
And,
stop.
Yeah. I was like, I just remember being in awe of her. She was older than me, but Caroline, I was closer to my age, and I had a huge crush on her sister Caroline. But Liz was like, she rocked the show, and the guy who played Henry Hill was amazing, and it was like this incredible production. And I saw that, I thought, oh my God, I seem to remember that Liz Mitchell,
Scarsdale High, Garden Road.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, that was my freshman roommate in college, and look, we had this band. Wait, I'm running over here. I'm running over to a bookshelf.
I wonder if Liz was upset that she broke up the band.
I thought I had cassette tape. I have our cassette tape someplace. I was just meeting with somebody about helping me scan. I've got so many photographs, college, like, you know, programs from being in plays, tickets of concerts archive. I went to when I was
you
a kid.
You need to archive it all, right?
Archival. That was the word I was trying to think of earlier.
Yes.
Archival.
Yes.
But yes, I need to archive it. And it's hard to like photograph them. Sometimes I'll take a picture of it with my phone, but then you get that shiny covering or those peel back photograph pages, you know, that are like disintegrating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I was talking the show that David and I did together right at the beginning of the 90s was a show called Hey Dude, which thus the name of
yes,
this podcast.
Yes, yes.
And I was a picture take. I took tons of photographs of everything behind the scenes, and everything was in many of those albums.
Yeah.
And when we had our reunion back in 2014, David, that was when I was inspired to find somebody to help me archive all of these photos, and they helped me put together this really cool album, like, you know, a digital album, but I have all of the other copies anyway. But they said the worst thing you can do for photos are those old photo albums with the sticky, you know, what we all love
I
to
know.
Have.
We didn't know. And
we
so, yeah,
know.
I have that. And then I have special archival photo album things from the early 2000s and late 90s. But even those, like, you can't photograph them to share. Well, now there's this whole social media thing where pictures with friends and, you know, random pictures are something that you can share with people to connect with people. So I need to be able to easily access them. Plus, I've got so much stuff. I've got too much stuff.
And if you're holding on to cassettes hanging around,
yeah,
you're really, yeah. Yeah. Those, gosh, I miss the cassettes.
Yeah, that's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast for sure.
So what was Liz and Lisa? Was your first band?
Liz and I had a band. We were freshman roommates in college. I was already a songwriter and a musician, and she was a singer. So we tried to put a song together for this talent show that happened the week before college started. There was this talent show, and we didn't end up in the talent show. I think a lot of upperclassmen were in it. We were not in it, but we started a band like right off the bat, like an acoustic duo. Sometimes we had a band, sometimes it was just the two of us. And we played together for like 6 years. A couple years after college, it was really time for us to do our own things. We had different ideas of, you know, like she was very seriously dating a guy who they started a band called Ida. And then she also started doing children's music a few years after that. She's very well known in the children's music world as Elizabeth Mitchell. And I like went solo or whatever with my band, which was some of the people we'd been working with.
Okay.
Still doing a lot of the songs we used to do together because I had written them. And I was still really attached to them and had this dream of like one day when I get a major label deal, maybe I could put these songs on there. But we had this group that was so great at Brown University. We had an amazing following, always packed house from the moment we played our first gig. It was just such a supportive audience. And it was also great at Brown because there's so many other professional musicians or people who became professional musicians. It was a lot of kids in college who took whatever they did very seriously. You know, like if you're an actor, I was an actor as well. You just felt like it was the real deal. You didn't feel like you were in college pretending that one day you might do it. So it was such a great way to like try to make you work at the best top level that you could because you felt inspired and challenged by the people around you, but also very supported because there were always great fans. But a lot of actors came out of Brown. You probably know Ben Shankman and the director, Michael Showalter. He's a writer director.
Yeah.
And I'm just like name dropping now, but Laura Linney went to Brown and just a lot of there. It was just like a really thriving, creative place. Maren Hinkle.
That must have been a great time to be in a popular band at Brown University. That must have been an amazing time for you.
It was. It was really exciting. I think my parents were a little concerned. Like, we sent you to college.
You're going to Ivy League school and you're going into music.
I know. Well,
yeah. Well, also, I mean, I know I'm jumping ahead now, but because we're talking about Brown and Friends, this musical that you did during the pandemic, I'm fascinated about. And that's putting us more in present day. And I know this is a 90s podcast, and I know we have a lot of all things 90s to talk about. But how did that come about?
It is very 90s in a way because I did graduate college in 1990.
That's perfect.
Which is very 90s.
For segueing us right in there.
I know. And because of COVID, We were not able to go to our, we have really, really fun, big, like, alumni, what is it, like graduation weekend where just tons of people go, you go in and there's huge parties and you see each other. And we missed our reunion. So we started doing what other people had done, which was Zoom meetings. We did like an LGBTQIA Zoom meeting happen where people connected. And then we did, I think that led to the musical theater. One of the folks who graduated around the same time I did, Carl Belfatti, connected with my friend Beth Wishney, who had graduated, who was also from Westchester, but not Scarsdale. But anyway, she, Beth was a year ahead of me. They put together a big Zoom meeting with pages and pages and pages of musical theater people from Brown. Some of them had focused on that. That was their main focus. And some of us just did musical theater. And so we were all hanging out. And our friend Brian Herrera is very organized. He's a professor and he's very organized. And he had everybody go around and say like their name, what class they graduated in, their fondest memory of musical theater at Brown, and then what they're doing now and what's going on. So a lot of people were voicing their concerns. There were a lot of people who are still actors, writers, directors, musicians like me, people who've got, you know, obstetricians, all kinds of jobs and people. But as they went around talking, because they were so animated and there were moments of crying, there were moments of laughing, I thought, and a lot of people who were worried about COVID, like they were really having a hard time doing musical theater live or having their students do musical theater or figuring out how they were going to perform or even have a job, you know. And as they were talking, I thought, this is a musical. This Zoom meeting is a musical. And I said, we should do a musical, you guys. It's like a Zoom musical. And in full Brown University graduate alumni fashion, everyone's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's put on a show. So over about a year, we ended up putting together a musical with tons and tons of people. Over about 100 graduates participated. It was all Brown University actors, directors, editors, music writers. And we wrote a musical called Together Apart that we raised money for the Actors Fund. I think we raised close to $50,000 for the Actors Fund.
Wow. That's
we were up on Broadway on demand and also 24-hour plays and with a limited run. And it was a way for us to connect with people from different generations, from our own generation, people we may not have known as well at college, but we ended up working with. And we were writing and learning how to produce things over Zoom. It was pre-recorded, so it was very well produced, but it looked like they were Zoom meetings. And the range, it turned out to be 10 mini musicals that was one musical because we had so many different stories to tell. And it made a really huge impact, I think, on a lot of us. Some people even ended up kind of changing direction in their life because they felt like they were students again. A lot of us were very interested in doing a lot of different things. And, you know, you get on with your life and maybe have kids and your careers and you kind of forget about that energized spark of being a college student thinking that you can do anything, you know, before everyone starts telling you no, which is what happens in our lives.
Yeah. And to have that, the freedom and the sort of safety of, you know, that community, first of all, but
yeah,
the intimacy part of it.
And where challenge.
You're not, and oh my, I can't
that's
even imagine.
That's the other thing that's great. Like these are all people who are really open with constructive criticism, a lot of constructive criticism or like, I forget the word, it's very lofty, like intellectual word for not banter, discourse.
Oh,
like,
discourse.
You know, like we would talk about the pieces and was it really expressing what you meant for it to express and just taking things on all these different levels. And a lot of us, you know, we don't get into that all the time in our daily lives. So it was really amazing. And you know, I was working with someone in Italy and in New York City and in with this, just people all over the world to write. And it gave us the tools to be able to do that now.
And you performed it over Zoom?
It was pre-produced to be shown on Zoom.
Oh, okay.
So it looked like Zoom meetings, but they were produced.
So anyone around the world could log in and see it?
Yes, but it was at a time. We're trying to get it into a library, hopefully at Brown University, where it'll be archived, that word again, and people can come see it. But we had specific contracts with all the actors because everybody was also working for free. And so there was a whole thing with the unions, of course, so that we could all work together.
Wow. What an incredible experience.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Relax and unwind tonight with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy work week flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with The Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out The Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Let's stay in that 90s of the college. And so that, what was the next step for you after leaving Brown? Was it, I'm going to be a musician? I mean, and I also want to hear, because it's sort of the famous story. I want to hear your version of it. Ben retold me his version of it, of getting
I want to hear his. I got to get a recording of his version. I got Ethan Hawke's version of it a few years ago at a reunion for Reality Bites.
Yes. Was it at Tribeca?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so we got Ethan's story. So after college, I moved to New York City. Liz Mitchell and I were going to have a band in New York. And so we did have a lot of contacts. We had already started playing clubs and venues in New York City, and we had a great following already and played some in LA. Like, it was just a great transition. We knew people who were already kind of interested in signing us to record deals. Like, we were really excited about this, but we went through some changes, like I said, and I went solo. She went solo, which was a big deal. It took a couple years to kind of understand what it means to sing, for me to sing my own songs, and to continue to play in all the music festivals that where you play, to meet industry people. So I had a lot of contacts. And then amidst it all, I became friendly with Ethan Hawke through my friend Josh Hamilton, who's an actor who went to Brown.
Yeah, sure.
So you know Hammy. And so Josh introduced us to Ethan and a bunch of other guys, because Ethan had been in the movie Dead Poets Society, which I loved, with a bunch of guys, other actors, Bob yeah. Leonard, Robert Sean Leonard, and a bunch of Josh Charles and a bunch of people. And then after that, he had been in the movie Alive with Josh Hamilton, which was about a soccer player, a bunch of soccer players on a plane that crashes. And the one, like Ileana Douglas was like the one woman in that. But so it was like all these guys graduating from college, going to New York City, meeting like just a huge group of guy actors through Josh. So Ethan became a friend of mine and a friend of Liz's. And I ended up living across the street from Ethan in New York City. So we just like hung out. He would come to my shows. Like there was a big group of us in New York, also women, a lot of people who've become very, very successful in their field, but songwriters and playwrights and musicians. And we were, you know, we were supposed to be Generation, was it X, where we were sort of blasé.
Right. Lazy, and good for nothing.
But that was not us. We were all kind of pounding the pavement, but also very artsy. And it was great that Ethan, who was probably one of the more successful of the group, he was just an artiste. You know, he was super into poetry and beat poetry and having a theater company and doing all this real stuff with all these other real actors, Austin Pendleton and Calista Flockhart. And I mean, just a lot of Pete Dinklage and John Mark Sherman and all these folks. I would write music for their shows, and it was just kind of this creative group. We all kind of palled around and ate brunch and stuff. And along the way, Ethan was in the movie Reality Bites, and they were shooting it already. And first, this is a really long version, but first Ethan asked me, he said that in the movie, his character plays a musician, and they were looking for somebody to write a song called I'm Nothing, because his band plays a song called I'm Nothing. So I wrote a song called I'm Nothing, but so did Dave Perner, you know, from Soul Asylum.
Yep.
Yeah.
So did the lead from Violent Femmes. A number of people wrote the same song, and they did not choose my version. But Ethan said, oh, you know, give me some other music. And he specifically asked for the song Stay because he was a fan of it. And it was a song I'd play in my concerts along with a bunch of other songs. I feel like we gave him a couple of songs. It was on a cassette tape. My friend Amy Armstrong said, who is also working with Ethan's theater company, helping him run the company. I think he had like the Niagaras, which was Frank Whaley's band, was on there. And maybe our friend Jesse Harris, who's a big singer-songwriter who ended up writing all the huge hits with Norah Jones. But I feel like there was a few of us on this mixtape, but maybe not. Maybe it was just me. And I just recorded my song Stay with my band because we had had a demo deal with a major label. And so Ethan passed the music along to Ben Stiller and to Stacey Scherr. They were interested in the song, but I think they were going to go meet with the band U2. They literally had the reels of the movie. They were going to Ireland. Their plane got canceled or something. So they came to see me play instead at the Wetlands that night. And they really loved it. And so they decided to put the song in the movie. And Ron Fair, the guy who was the record company guy from RCA, decided to put it on the soundtrack, which is funny too, because Ron Fair, somebody who wanted to sign me at EMI Records, his boss was Ron Fair. And this guy wanted to sign me, and Ron Fair was like, no. And then later, Ron Fair put me on the soundtrack. That's my version of the story. Is that the same version you have?
A lot more. I mean, I got the sort of...
Well, I was there. And this is the other thing for Ben and for Ethan and for all these folks, you know, they've done a million things, whatever. I don't know what their main, you know, starting point is. I think of Ben, I think of his folks, you know, who are big fans of, I think of his own show that he had, you know, all these things that if you're a super nerd, you know, all these things. For me, this was like the beginning of my commercial, like real commercial music. I had been played on the radio, some college stations. I had a nice following, but that was like the big thing that was the breakout thing. And because Ben is involved and because Ethan is involved in the story, people want to hear about it. So I talk about it all the time. It's like this big thing in the middle of all these other things. For them,
it's like a
small thing that happened. Like, yeah, I got this girl's song in a movie.
No, I think it was such a, Ben tells it, you know, because I just remember the level of excitement that he had. And this is the way he tells it, is that Ethan brought him a cassette. I think there were other artists on it. Your song was the one that jumped out to him. And immediately he's like, I want this. This has to be a part of the movie. And it has to, like, it's what the movie is. It's the whole vibe. And what he said was his version, and I'm sure that U2 story probably happened. He didn't tell me that part of it. But that
Stacey yes. shared well, that part
all
of it.
I want is like, you, oh, I all know. I want is you is like, in the movie.
Yeah, no, that but, of course but, that's in the movie.
It is. But, and I didn't know. Stacey's like, we weren't going to put it on. Or like, it felt like they weren't going to put it on, but they happened to come see me play. Right. But I didn't
but
know that.
Stay is associated with the movie.
For sure. Yeah, no. And, yeah. and but he had to negotiate with the record label that was putting out the soundtrack. About, because there was resistance and
he, because Ron didn't want to sign me back see? In college either, and because we made a deal that we kept the master, which is
so
a really
see?
Big deal.
So that's I love this.
And we weren't going to sign a record contract. I don't know if they were interested in signing a contract with me, but we weren't going to. It wasn't going to be like you're on the soundtrack, so you're all in
right.
the
right
label. But wait, so Ben was
well, ben
fighting for me. Thank you, Ben.
And then what the negotiation he said, which was finally how it got onto the soundtrack, was the record company said, well, if we put her on the soundtrack, then you have to use this other band of ours that has a cover, a reggae band that has a cover.
Oh, my god!
That's also in the movie. And
Baby, I Love Your Way, which was the reggae version that we were all like,
exactly.
Well, all right.
So that was that. That's his piece.
That's hilarious that Ron probably
yep.
produced.
And so,
I have to have this conversation with Ben again to see like what
for
the,
sure. I know.
The full story.
The
I love the behind
again,
the scenes.
For sure. That, by the way, yeah. he says hello.
I love it. tell him hello.
Notes showing that you were the first musician to have a number one single while not signed to a label.
Yes, which was, again, my attorney, Adam Ritholtz, made sure that we kept the master. So I wasn't signed to the label. I will say, here's two things. One is the song was only available. It wasn't the modern era where I could have my own streaming of my own song by itself. It was the only way you could get the song was right. to buy the soundtrack and eventually the single. And so the song, that was the only place you could get it. So it's so sweet. Like I would hear from the Knack when the lead singer was alive and the guys from Crowded House, they're like, thank you so much for having that hit song on that record. Cause some of the songs, you know, mm-hmm. already were out there, but this was a song that you could only get by buying the record. And I will say, even though I was not signed to RCA Records, I became really close friends and I still am today with the head of the radio department that helped get the song. I think Tom Pullman, who's now the head of iHeartRadio, he and this guy named Cubby Bryant, who's a really big DJ in New York at one of the top stations, they decided to put the song on the radio in Houston. And I had signed the rights for them to make it a single, but I think this radio station took a step and made it a single and started playing it. And then it caught on. Other radio stations played it. And so I think that helped a lot. And Skip Bishop, who is the head of the radio department, is a super great radio promoter guy, and he helped move that along as well. And then on top of it, Ethan ended up directing the video for the song, which was another amazing story. But what was really amazing, I think the record company, I remember having a meeting with Ron Fair and some other folks from the record company. I think they were excited to have a movie star associated with the song. But what was really great was Ethan had a great idea to make have a video where there were no edits, where I was like walking
right.
around
I
singing
the
song.
There's a cat.
And he got a great,
yes, there's a cat.
There's a cat, Mardo. His cat was in there. Our friend Amy played the cat, was the cat wrangler. She threw the cat in here and then picked it up and moved it to the other place. I later played a cat wrangler in Hot Tub Time Machine Part 2 in my own stay video with Craig Robinson playing me. But I think because of all these different pieces of the story, you know, it's a great story that it was like an independent artist that Ethan directed the video, but he actually had an amazing idea and made a beautiful video. So all the pieces of the puzzle.
And then that was it. That was, like you said, the turning point, the commercial success,
the
I assume people came flooding after you.
Yes. All the people who were kind of interested when I was playing all these big music festivals like South by Southwest, they would all come to me and the A&R guys were so excited, but they were kind of like junior A&R guys, mostly men, some women, people, guys, I'm using the word guys as people. But then once the song started climbing up the charts and of course their bosses became very interested and people were flying in on helicopters and there were, you know, all kinds of, when the song was at number one, that's when I signed, that week I signed my record
wow.
deal with Geffen
and how
Records.
Old were you at that point?
That was fun. I think 26, wow. 25, 26.
Was there a long tour that followed promoting it?
There was a lot of touring. There had been touring before. There was touring during. There was a lot of promotional things like being in a white limousine and playing in someone's house or other radio festivals with like Cher. It was really awesome. There was a lot. And also at the same time, I was trying to make a record that came out like a year later. Because I also was, I'm very business minded. And I wanted to make sure all my ducks were in a row and all the contracts were signed with all the people that I work with. And it took a lot longer than I had hoped, but we put the record out a year later.
But how incredible that you had that mindset that you were able to, because most people would just, right, sign, just
yeah,
like
yeah.
It's the moment you've been waiting for.
There might have been a midpoint in between the two, but mm-hmm. but yes. So we finally made that first record called Tales, and we did put the song Stay on it because I wanted one of my own records to have the song on it. And then I just kept making records every year or two for the last 25 years or however many years it is. 30, almost 30 years.
Incredible. And you know, first of all, you have like run the gamut. You have a successful children's music career as well. So yes. It's like you don't stay in one genre necessarily. Listening to you even talking about, you know, musical theater, that's its own, and children's music. And I wish that I had a Lisa Loeb children's album when my kids were little.
I know, right?
Who did we have? Lori Berkner? Do you remember Lori?
Oh, yeah, Lori.
Lori Berkner.
She's great.
She was the one.
I think a lot of us, and it's good, that's a good thing about now versus the 90s. Back in the 90s, any of us in our careers, you felt like you had to stay in your lane. Because if you were an actor, if you were a musician, they might not believe you, or an author. As a musician, I was also an actor, but I was not doing a lot of acting. I did a few cameos here and there, but it didn't look cool if you had like I have an eyewear brand now. Back in the day, like you might not be taken seriously, but now things have opened up so you can do all the things you want to do. So you do see a lot of musicians playing with a lot of different genres. I do a lot of standards and classics and kids music and sort of folky. Like I loved Weird Al growing up, and I loved Bob and Ray, and
best.
I loved Steve Martin, and I loved Free to Be You and Me, and all these things were grown up and... But like, it was kind of like babysitter music. Like you didn't know some of the early Sesame Street. You didn't know. It was grown up humor. It was very Carol Burnett show, you know, all these things that really crossed the lines. Like my friends and I used to take Bob and Ray shows and like write out the shows and then reenact the skits, the radio skits, because they were very dry and funny and silly, but storytelling. And so that's what children's music is to me. I do a lot of standards because that's the music I grew up listening to. That's why people make Christmas albums.
Yes.
It's not because they're...
Oh boy, here we go.
You know,
Christina loves Christmas albums.
I love Christmas songs too. I know, I need to make a very Jewish Christmas still, but I have done holiday songs. Like you just want to explore all the things that you think of as being in that category, the huge category of music.
Have you ever heard Jack Johnson's soundtrack for the Curious George movie?
I've heard some of it, yes. Mm. And it's so great, you know?
My kids were in preschool, and like the montage at the end of the year was that song, Walk With Me,
oh, yeah.
Baby Lee. And I was bawling. I mean, the music on that album is amazing.
Yeah, and the amount of times I've heard that as the sample track for We Need a Song Like This in this commercial, or We Need a Song Like That in this movie. I hear that so much.
Mm.
It's a big genre. But wait, so what? So the touring, was it like a grueling? Because we spoke to Adam Duritz the other week, and he said he toured for a year and a half after the Counting Crows' first album. And was it like a long time on the road and on a tour bus and all that stuff?
You know, I did actually do some touring with Adam Duritz in Europe with those guys. That's when I met Fran Drescher. I was so excited because she was in Spinal Tap. She was Bobby Fleckman in Spinal Tap.
The best.
And I was like, Fran, you need to bring Bobby Fleckman onto The Nanny. And I want to be her assistant. I want to be the manager's assistant. And she did. And I got to go on The Nanny as Fran, as Bobby Fleckman's assistant.
Oh, that's genius.
I had trouble reaching that level of energy of a sitcom, but that's a whole other story. but yeah, I did go on tour quite a bit. There was a lot of promotional touring. You know, I did a certain amount of touring when you have a radio hit, there's a lot of opportunities to do like those kind of jingle ball and like these things where it's like multiple artists. So I did that. I did my own shows. And then I wanted to make a record. So I made my Tales record. When my Tales record came out, I did a lot of promo. But with Geffen Records, they wanted me in Australia for 2 weeks. They wanted me in Japan for 2 weeks, two times. They wanted me in Europe for like a month. And then I would do shows in the US. And then it was time to start making the next record. And so then I did the exact same thing again for the next record. And then things became a little VH1 behind the scenes where you're making a record and then the record company is like, where's the single? And you're like, but you just told me there was a single. And then they're dragging you on and on and on. And then you switch labels because another label wants to put out your record. And then you switch labels to another label. A lot of like label switching and stuff. So I did touring. And then little by little, I got a little older and I was like, I had a TV show on the Food Network. I just kept doing other things also. So I never have settled into a lot of t-shirt tours, which is what I call them when there's like those shirts with all the,
with all the dates
on them. Right. I would like to do more touring now, but of course now I've got a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old. And over the last, even though I love playing concerts now, I really am in a groove. It's like 3 days here, 4 days there. I may be going out a week with each child. They said they want to go help me sell merch. So that might like jam a few more concerts into a period of time than I normally would get to do. But I'm envious of some of the bands who really get to pound the pavement and just be out there forever.
Oh, it sounds grueling.
And also, yeah. I've always constantly looked at my life in a very full way. Like I've wanted my life to be balanced. So if I was in a relationship, I might try to stay home a little bit more. Or when I was getting into my late 30s and I wasn't married and I didn't have kids yet, I was like, I need to focus on that more. Mm. So I sort of would try to find projects and things that weren't on the road or spend more time in New York, like when I met my husband in my late 30s. So it's always this kind of balance where you're looking at your life. You hear it a lot from actors, you know, where you're like, I only want to work on the Radford lot down the street. You know, get me, that's what I want. A recurring as the best friend on the Radford lot. That's what I want. Hello.
Please. Just convenience for
yeah,
the
no
purchase.
Tech talk. No, like I'm not like a, I'm just like a, that'll be 45 cents.
I love it.
That's what I want. But yeah, so it's, you know, I didn't do as much t-shirt tours, but I do go out and play nice theaters.
It sounds like you did it the way you wanted to, even at a young age. You knew,
yeah, I mean, in
keep
retrospect,
my masters. I'm not signing with a label. I'll tour when I want to. I'll do a cooking show if I want to.
I'll act when I want to.
Acting, yeah. I'd like to do more acting. I'd like to do more writing. I'd like to do more songwriting. I'd like to do more touring. I'd like to do lots of things, but I'm just trying to do my best.
And
be a mom, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a full-time job. It's a full-time
job.
That age, especially at those turning points, those moments.
Have you found that? Like, even when your husband's helping, it's, no offense to anybody, it's the mom's job. It turns out to be a mom's job.
I was going to say, no offense, it's not the same as the mom. Sorry, David. I know.
You know where those socks are. You know that like they're supposed to try them on, but if they don't quite fit, put them back in the package because I'm going to Big Five.
I had a friend today who I saw whose daughter my son is a junior in high school. We have a daughter who's a third year in college now.
And where are you guys living now?
We're in New York.
Oh, you're in New York. Okay.
Yeah. But, and I saw a friend today who said, you know, her middle daughter was having, you know, some stuff going on at college. And she said, I sent Doug, her husband, to go take care of that. And she said, because I have a junior in high school and like, Doug would forget to feed her. Like, I had to be the one at home.
Come on, you girls.
It might not be you, David. It might not be you.
How old are your kids, David?
Okay, first of all, they have Postmates and Uber Eats.
They do. You should see the bills. They're coming in.
Very
She's like, can
true.
I just Postmate a cheese Danish from Starbucks? I'm like, no. Right. A, you
$15.
Can walk there. And B, no. What?
Paying the fees on they have no idea, but they know how to feed themselves. And as a father of three, my oldest is 20. She's at Tulane University. I have a senior son in high school and a 13-year-old daughter.
And are you in New York also?
No, we're in Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah.
And my wife's going to Tulane this weekend for a mom's weekend for Kappa Kappa, whatever. And so, yeah, I have my son and my daughter, and they will be fed. And
you're very competent. I'm very proud of you. I mean, I knew David. I knew you when you were 17, and you were not.
Oh my gosh.
You didn't show signs of being able to do this back then. So I take such pride in seeing you grow up to be a responsible young man, husband, father. I'm very proud of you.
It's very good. I mean, you know, it takes a lot of work with kids. And I think also, well, we're in the modern times and we're all trying to balance life and work. And, you know, it's just a matter of taking a step back when you can.
Yeah.
To take a look.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. If tonight's movie night is just what you need, make it special with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The Home Depot wants every mom to have their own outdoor oasis this Mother's Day. Whether that be a new space to relax or a beautiful garden upgrade, at The Home Depot, you can give mom a gift that's as unique as she is, with a stylish and comfortable place to entertain or relax for the mom who does it all. And with convenient delivery, you won't have to stress over getting it to her either. Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers for the mom who's great with gardening? Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens with the Home Depot's Mother's Day Savings Event happening now. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97, for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Start your Mother's Day shopping and saving today by checking out the Home Depot's extensive selection online at homedepot.com or directly in-store near you with convenient pickup and delivery options. See homedepot.com/delivery for details. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Let me ask you something. You do a lot of voiceover work too?
I do a lot of voiceover work too.
How I want to know what the in to voiceover work is. I know we're
just
doing
about
a
million auditions. I mean, my in was a long time ago as a musician, about 20 years ago. Hallmark wanted me to sing a song. One of their songs for a commercial. And I said I would do it, but I want to do the voiceover in it. Mm. And so I did, but and I sounded like a voiceover person because I am, you know, like I'm a singer and I'm an actor, so I could do a voiceover. And we also had a lot of speech training in high school when I was growing up, where you'd have to speak clearly and
diction.
And also, I was also a DJ in high school. And I just, have a relationship with being in the studio. So it just worked well. And then from there, I had an agent and I would do auditions, and then I would get a Pampers commercial, or not Pampers. I did Huggies and Bounty paper towels. I was the voice of Bounty for years until one day my mom said, I think I heard someone else doing your Bounty commercial.
Oh,
I was
no.
like, what?
I've been replaced.
No, it was like she had seen my husband with another woman or something. I was like, what? and I heard it. I was like, oh. And then it turns out they don't tell you when they give the campaign to someone else. But then that being said, when I got the Bounty commercial in the first place, my younger brother is a post-production audio engineer and studio owner in New York City. And he said, yeah, well, when you got that job, you took it away from my friend so-and-so that I've been working with for years on it. So, but anyway, I have a million auditions and I just
because you have such a your voice. I mean, it's in your music as well. It's just such a. I feel like you could just wrap yourself in Lisa Loam and listening, just hearing you talk. It's just you have this, and I didn't even. I just assumed, because when you talked about acting, I assumed as voiceover had to be the minute I was hearing your voice, and now
it's a fun job too, right?
Like, that's all I want to do.
So I did that, and then agent. Agent and auditioning, that's it.
Yeah.
And it does happen too often where, you know, I'll be at a premiere for something, especially kids movies and stuff like that we go see with my kids. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, meet the writer or the director or somebody and I'll say, I loved it. You know, if you ever need another voice, and they're like, oh, you do voice acting? I'm like, hasn't my agent called you like 7 million times to like bug you every time I call them and say, I really want to be in a movie. I'll be like a little mouse in a box. Again, like the recurring. I'll be like a little mouse in a box in the corner, but I want to be in like the big screen things, you know?
That's
and
the dream.
Sometimes people just don't know. So you have to just put it, if it's something you want to do, you put it out there.
Yes. I think this is me putting it out there.
Put it out there.
Because there's nothing more fun.
Plus people love you guys. So there are a lot more opportunities, which I wish I could get more to.
Nowadays,
you know, where it's like cameo casting, stunt casting, but some of those are very fun too.
Those would be fun. But I think it's the audition, figuring out the technique of that audition, because when you get the sort of breakdown of what you should, there's like, go into a closet, the most soundproof place you have, put a coat over your head, and just read each line. Like, you don't, as
you
an
don't
actor,
even have to shower or wear pants.
No,
of course.
Nothing. Although now you have to put makeup on when you go into the studio, if they have you in the studio, because they also have to have the behind the scenes.
There has to be some behind the scenes.
One of my best friends, Christine, do you remember my friend Jason?
Of course, Jason Willinger.
Yes, he's literally one of the biggest voiceover guys. And he lives on the Upper East Side. He turned his master bedroom closet into this like state-of-the-art studio.
State-of-the-art.
no, but he not only auditions, but he does these campaigns right from his closet.
Yeah, I do them from this desk.
Incredible.
Yeah,
I'm like, are you sure? I do a daily radio show from this room. I'm like, are you sure it sounds okay? They're like, it's great. It sounds great.
It sounds so good.
I'm like, but I don't have like the... Like, I have friends, who've got the whole thing set up with the...
Yes.
I wanted to do something. This is a great idea. Closet in your house, even in New York City, get like a piece of cloth with a triangular top where when you open the door, the cloth is hanging down on both sides and over your head. And then you have a rolling cart that you put your little setup.
Because then you've got your protection, right?
And you can even do one that goes around the back. Like a
little tent.
Curtain.
Like a tent.
Yeah, little tent.
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah, hanging from a door.
You should patent that idea right now.
I do. I also have this raincoat idea. I was on a hike with the Boy Scouts the other day with my son, and everybody was wearing these rain jackets, and it was really raining hard, but they only went down to their waist. And I was like, why don't they have like the weird zipper pants, you know, with like the zipper shorts? Why don't they have the zipper rest of the jacket so that you're like wearing a tent, basically? You know, like the long piece at the bottom that like, why don't they have that?
I think you're giving away your ideas into bigger public...
These
way right now.
Please, if anybody hears this and they can be my business partner on these, you can have a good portion of the
Lisa, this
income.
Is something, tell me if I'm crazy or if I'm remembering this wrong, and it's a very off-topic moment that I believe is when I met you. Did we shoot Dodgeball in your house? Did we shoot
I was going to mention this. You didn't shoot it in my house, but you shot it on my street, like a few doors down on Chiquita Street.
Yes, it was on
you
that
shot
street.
It on Chiquita Street, and it was in the house. I believe it was in the house of Dweezil Zappa's family's driver's son.
Okay.
Dweezil Zappa, his family had a driver. He used to drive all the rock stars or some of them. I remember he had stories. He was Keith Moon's driver from the Who.
Ooh.
And he was a British guy. And I think his family owned that house.
Yes, because
it looked a lot like my house.
Okay. And it was,
and I was like, oh my gosh, we should go over there. We should say hi. Well, should we say hi? Should we not say hi? Let's go say hi. Well, I kind of worked with Ben Stiller that one time. I wonder if he'll remember me. Should I go over there? Let's go over there.
That's
and
my
we
memory.
Did. We went over there. I remember the lights. It was maybe a night shoot.
It was an all night shoot in Studio City, David.
Yes.
Like near the Chiquita Radford Street. Lot. Yes, exactly. Yes. And I remember.
Yes,
that was
Dodgeball.
When I met you. Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh,
so I'm
Dodgeball
so glad
so good.
That I'm clocked that in the right way, because I thought I could really botch this story and there could be no truth to it whatsoever.
I was going to mention that.
Great. I'm so happy because that's when I feel like we met. And I remember Ben, that was when he told the whole story. But that's so fun. Oh, wow.
Me too. And now we can say, like, every once in a while, it's happened to me where I've met people that I really admire. And then in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm friends with them. I'm friends with that person. And then I one or two times, this one in particular I'm thinking of, who I'm not going to say their name, I met them again and they're like, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so, nice to meet you. And I was like, gulp. I was like, I kind of thought I was friendly with that person. So now there's a deal, you know, we have to make a deal like, okay, now, yes. We like, oh,
no.
Yeah.
We are friends.
Yeah, we know each other. Oh, yeah, we're friends. Yeah, I did their podcast. Yeah, we're friendly. Yeah.
Yes. No. This will be friends for
this
sure.
This is like, now we're friends. Okay.
Yes, for sure. No, I think we've all probably had one of those stories that of not to name names, because I've had one as well. Where
what if it was the same person?
Oh,
it could be.
Well, we'll talk after about it, because I still get like uncomfortable when I hear the person's name. I have like smoke comes out of my ears thinking,
me
oh.
Too.
Lisa, you host a show on SiriusXM about 90s music?
I do. I'm on the channel 90s on 9, which is channel 9 on SiriusXM.
Yep, I know it.
I have a show, a daily show, and I am learning more and more about 90s music than I even ever knew. Because during the 90s, I did know some bands like, I don't know, like there were some bands I definitely knew, but a lot of music I did not know at all. I was not into a lot of commercial music when I became a commercial musician in the 90s. I knew a lot of songs from the 70s, like soft pop or 80s new wave or alternative music. But there was a lot of music I never actually knew very well. Mm-hmm. So
it was a great time for female artists, though. I mean, I love your music,
yeah.
Alanis, mm-hmm. the Indigo Girls, I mean, the whole Lilith Fair tour. I mean, there was a Tracy Chapman, right? There were so many amazing singer, mm-hmm. female singer-songwriters in the 90s.
Yes. I actually, I think about that a lot. It's kind of like in New York City, there are places that are tourist spots like John's Pizzeria, but it's actually really good. There's a reason that it's a tourist spot because it is really good. I feel like that's like the Sarah McLachlan story. It's such a, like a classic, great. Almost cliched story, but it's real and it's for a reason. Like Sarah McLachlan put together Lilith Fair, and she called me up like a year beforehand and she was doing some test concerts to see if this concept would work. Cause a lot of us were hearing, oh, we can only play one woman on the radio at a time. You know, oh, we're already playing Sheryl Crow. They can't play a record. They're playing Sheryl Crow. And you're like, oh. And Sarah McLachlan was like, I don't know what her exact words were, but you know, something like that's enough. So anyway, she put together a couple of test concerts. And at first I didn't want to do it because the idea of doing an all women's concert, I went to all girls school for 11 years growing up in Dallas, Texas. And I didn't like being separated out as a woman. You know, you play good guitar for a girl or I just didn't like that. So when I thought a woman's concert, that's so separate. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. And yet she said, it's going to be me. I feel like it was like, I may be combining a couple concerts, but it was like me, Paula Cole, Amy Mann, maybe Emmylou Harris or Patti Smith, a couple of other people. I thought, well, I want to play that concert. That sounds really cool. And so I did. And it was great. And it did actually have a different tone with all the women lead singers or heads of their band, front people. And so then when the Lilith Fair started, it really was a huge deal. Like it did bring women together and the audiences were great. There were a lot of men too, but audiences were great. It had a different tone than a lot of the big festivals had. Backstage, like, we were all getting to know each other a little bit better. You don't get to do that with musicians, period, unless you're opening for them or they're opening for you. Like, you don't sit around backstage with Sean Colvin and the Indigo Girls and Sarah McLachlan and Emmylou Harris and Bonnie Raitt, like,
learning the songs
to Closer to Fine, you know, like, you don't, that's not real life, but that was actually happening. And it was, and as the years went on, it was neat too, because it got more, I felt like there was more diversity and inclusivity. I think it would have gone, continue to go in that direction had the festival continued, but it was just a really special, special time. And it really did make a big impact on women and women musicians being able to, you know, be out there.
It was ahead of its time. I mean, I think right? I mean, can you imagine Lilith Fair today? It'd be massive.
Yeah, it's almost now it would have to be more like tonal, because it was just the feeling. Like, I've been to a couple of big festivals. I've been to a Fish festival, the band Fish. Mm-hmm. My husband's a big Fish head. I've been to Outside Lands that had a real variety of music. I've been to a couple of festivals and situations. But this, I don't know if it would be all women anymore, but maybe it would be, you know, non-binary. I don't know. It has like a certain feel that you would want to capture.
Well, I'll tell you, the artists that I've seen lately are not only our generation, but like a generation ahead of us. You know, I saw Stevie Nicks at the Ohana Festival. We saw Roger Waters. We saw Elton John. And these are the people that are playing their hearts out in a way that, not to put down new musicians, but it's like a dying breed. You got to see these people now, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I loved seeing Elton John. I saw him back in the 70s when I was a kid. My mom spent the night out for tickets. That was the last time we ever did that. She met scalpers after that. And we realized, other than spending the night out to get tickets to see the Police. I feel like that was an interesting time too, where marketing and good music crossed paths. You know, the same with film. You know, you had these great, huge movies that were actually really good, mm-hmm. and things like that. But there is a lot of music out there that's really, really good that you just don't always hear about. There's so much out there. I worked with an artist recently. I'm not going to mention their name because A, my mind is blanking, and B, because I don't want to say they're not super successful, but they're playing big theaters all the time. I had never heard of them before. They're like amazing live performers. I think there's a lot out there that we just don't even know about. And yes, there is a lot of, you know, quick stuff that people are just trying to get famous, or I'm not sure. I don't know how much longevity it has. I don't know if that's even their goal. But yeah.
Well, I played your song for my 13-year-old daughter. I was telling Christine, we were in the car, and she was really into the song, and I was about to start saying, you know, the boyfriend sounds kind of like a jerk, kind of like condescending, at least, you know, telling you talk too much and you're naive and, you know, whatever the boyfriend in Stay, you know, how derogatory he might have been. It's nothing compared to what the misogyny that's going on in some of these songs right now.
Well, there's a lot of expression in different ways. My kids listen to a variety of things that there can be really unusual songs that become very, very popular or accessible to kids. There's so much music out there.
There's so much music out there. Do either of your kids, are they musical?
They love music. I asked my son this morning, I'm like, you haven't been playing me music lately, because he used to love all these different songs and Lil Nas X and, like, you know, we have to listen to 21 Pilots and all these people. And lately he's like, well, whatever you guys are listening to. I listen to a lot of podcasts and, you know, mm-hmm. I listen to Smartless and I listen to NPR. My daughter has a lot of music she listens to. She knows a lot about a lot of music. So they love music. I wish they would play music. Maybe one day they will. I don't know.
There's an artist that we're very close with named Jax. And do you know her? Victoria's Secret song and 90s kid. She was my daughter's babysitter. And during the pandemic, she started making TikTok videos. She would babysit, and she and my daughter would do TikTok. She started writing some jingles on TikTok. Then all of a sudden she was on the Ellen show, and my wife was like, what is Jax doing on Ellen? And she got signed to Atlantic. She's an amazingly talented singer-songwriter, badass young woman business mind, and she's like a sister to our daughter, Chelsea. And she brought Chelsea on tour with her on the Jingle Ball tour. And during Victoria, wow. She wrote Victoria's Secret for Chelsea for something she was going through, and brought her on stage. I mean, Christine was there, you know, in Miami, New York, L.A. But check Jax out, because she reminds me of you at that time in your life. She's just doing it her own way and writing and doing it herself.
I love that. I'm looking at her picture right now. I pulled it up so I can. I've heard a couple of the songs, but now I'll have to check it out further.
She's amazing.
And that's the main thing too. I mean, like, I know for sure with me from the 90s, like I'm on the 90s radio station. I'm still like, and today I'm like the 90s and today. I do make a record like every couple of years. I made one that came out right before COVID that I'm really, really connected with. And it's great when I'm on the road, because I do have fans who know my music, you know, not, but that being said, I also definitely have people who know that one song or those two songs. Like I had a handful of songs on the radio. I love that people have a connection to me at all, but it's really cool when people share the new music, the new stuff. They're, you know, I think I'm the same with certain artists. I think of Colin Hay a lot from the band Men at Work. He's great. Sort of more from you think of him from the 80s, but he had a huge song from the movie Garden State that Zach Braff made. Mm-hmm. But he's just so currently now. Or Amy Mann, who, you know, she had a hit in the 80s with hits in the 80s with Till Tuesday, and she's still making music all the time. It's great to listen to. So it's fun when people share like the current things, all the things.
Yeah. And you've done it. I mean, you're the way you have. And also I love, you know, and we're going to let you go, and we've taken up so much of your time, but the way you shared earlier about at certain moments in your life, you leaned further into what you needed at that period of time. And I imagine that with the music, it's the same thing. I imagine where you're at now with your family and as a mom, like the music is inspired in a different way than it was in the 20s. And when you were in your 20s, but I feel like you have, like you said, 30 years, like this is longevity. I mean, I feel like it's not easy to do. It's not easy to sustain, to reinvent yourself that way, and also to do it on your terms and do everything else on top of that.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I don't think about it as much, except for when I'm talking to my mom. She's like, well, you sound busy. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Isn't but it
just, you know, you just
way?
Always have one more thing to make. You know, you're like, oh, but we could also do this, you know.
Well, it's been incredible, you know, to follow you over the years and reconnect with you after the dodgeball shoot, because now it's a solidified friendship. And it's just been such a pleasure talking to you. Like this.
Thank you.
We so appreciate it. And thanks for everything.
I'm going to listen to your show on Sirius XM, the 90s.
You can. Oh, yes. I forgot. There's also a thing on it that I'm more proud of called Where They Are Now. It's a feature where I talk to people who you may know from the 90s, but who are still doing things now. So I've interviewed Weird Al, and I've interviewed Paula Abdul and Lacey Chabert and just people from different fields who again, like you knew them from a certain era, but they're still doing it today. And it's because I was interviewed for an Oprah Winfrey special on one of her channels at one point. And it was like me and a celebrity chef and somebody else. And they came to our homes and they lit it and shot it and they interviewed us. She wasn't there, of course. But the show was called Where Are They Now? And I was like, oh, really? That does sound like Spinal Tap. You know, like we're all sitting around the radio listening to our song. We're like, oh, we're on the radio. And then it's like from the Where They Are Now files. You're like, but we're on tour right now, promoting a new album. So I wanted to create something that was a spin on that, that was Where They Are Now. Because it respects the fact that, yeah, you may know somebody at first from a certain era, but there's a big space for people to understand and hear about what they're doing now.
And it's on Sirius XM as well?
Yeah, it's on the app. You can hear the full length interviews if you search Lisa Loeb. And it's also, you'll find the segments on the live show when you, you know, here and there, depending on whether we have an interview up that week.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome.
Where they are now.
Your music has brought us a lot of joy. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
you guys.
This was such a treat.
Thank you.
Wow. How down to earth is she, right? Like,
she's terrific. She really is. She's so talented and multi-talented, by the way, too. Because we didn't even really get to talk about the acting, but she really, and she's, I think, you know, undersells it too, but like little parts here, cameos there. But even if you go back and watch that video, she's very talented. And she had the number one song
on Billboard.
Yeah.
You know, how many people can say that in 94 or 95, whatever? I mean, she was in the middle of complete rock stardom or pop stardom.
Yeah. During a very competitive time. Like, you're right. You know, there were huge artists then and she just took off. And really, like you said, did it on her own terms in a way that very different than what we heard from Adam Duritz, you know, when things took off for them. And I know they're, you know, different, you know, genres, so to speak, but I feel like in different people, but the way she sort of, you know, was very calculated about knowing what she wanted to do and how she wanted to do it. And
yeah, as a 26 year old girl too, you know, she's a young girl who just was like, I'm not signing with a label. I'm keeping my masters. I will tour when I want to tour. And I don't know. I loved her.
Yeah, it was great. Really, really great. Another good guest.
Great show.
Yes.
Great show.
Great show. So I'll see you next week. We will hopefully come back and join us next week. We won't tell you who our guest is because we're just keeping it a secret for.
Oh, it's a really good one. I'm dying to say it, but thank you everyone.
Yes, I like letting there be a little surprise here, right?
Yeah. I'm dying to say it, but let's thank everyone for listening. We really appreciate your joining us and hope you enjoy the show. And Christine, have a great rest of the week.
You too, love. Okay. See everyone soon. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars.
And please follow us on Instagram at HeyDudeTheNineties Called. See you next time.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.